That's right, my friends. Welcome to another episode of Christian Podcast with Beto and Mili Gudiño. Today we have a special guest, Jake Barrena, and we're going to be talking about authenticity and more. Welcome to the show. Yeah. Okay, so Milik, why don't you introduce us to how, like, did you meet our guest? And maybe later on we can go into, like, Jake, like, who you are and a little bit of what you do. So, Milik, welcome to the show, first of all, because it's great to have you. How you doing?
Thank you, Vito. I love to be here. I'm, like, excited. Like, you don't have idea. Like, long time ago, maybe, like, 2 years ago, I saw him on Facebook. And I saw, like, he was working out, like, pure muscles, you know, like, always throwing good motivation words or advice. Like, who is this guy? And then I saw that we were having friends in common. So I just friend him. Mm-hmm. And since then, I'm following him, you know, and I said, like, oh, and he's kind of spiritual because he's praying. You know, I got you. Like, so he got me more, you know. Yeah. So we were friends on Facebook. And finally, I reached out to him. I said, he have a new book, Beto.
Ooh,
and like, oh, my gosh. Great. You know, he's a writer, right?
That's
more
great.
He's a coach. And Yes. So thank you so much for accepting our invitation. It's so wonderful. I'm ready and prepared to learn more today about who he is and what I can learn to apply that in my life.
Love it. Thank you, Mili. All right, Jake. Well, this is the time. Can we get to know you a little bit, like a little bit who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. I've been an entrepreneur for the last 19 years. I've been married for the last 15 years to my beautiful bride, Ashley Britt Barrena. And then I have two beautiful kids. So Kingston James and Tinley Grace. So Kingston's 5, Tinley's 7, and they're everything. They're my world, they're my heart. And then right now I currently own a real estate company called Barrena Real Estate Group. We have a team of about 18. We do residential real estate in South Orange County, some North Orange County, kind of agents spread throughout Orange County. But I primarily focus in South Orange County, so Laguna Niguel, Dana Point, that whole area. Not really passionate about real estate, but I'm passionate about people.
Wow.
So I love helping people. It's funny because when I talk to clients and they say, you must really love real estate. You've done it for 8 years. No, not really. I love helping people though. So find a home but like real estate per se, you know, the structure of it, I don't care for that, but I love people. So it's a natural fit. And I've been a salesperson pretty much my entire life. I only like to sell what I am passionate about. I cannot sell anything that I don't care
just
for.
Like Mili.
Oh, yeah. But if I'm passionate about authenticity, helping people in some regard, I'm all about it. And I can just, I could sell a pen. I could sell anything. So, but I have to be passionate about it, that's for sure. So I wrote a book this last year, which I'm really excited about. It took me about 9 months, about 2 months to write the manuscript, which at the time was about 80,000 words. So that's about 300 pages. But then through all the rounds of editing and cover design and the audiobook, which is a huge thing, and that's narrated by me.
Wow.
Most people don't know that there's 11,000 books published every single day.
Wow.
So that's a lot.
11,000.
11,000 books.
Wow.
So that's a lot of content. And so with all that content, one good way to stand out above the rest is to have an audiobook. Especially an audiobook narrated by the author. Normally, out of the 11,000, there's about 25%, so a little less than 4,000 of those books have an audiobook. And of that 4,000, there's only about 10%, so about 350 that are narrated by the author. So that's a very slim margin. And typically, it's more of a memoir, which makes sense with my book, because my book is, it's called Carpe Now, and it's about seizing your best life, but you do that through authenticity. And it's through diving into these 10 authentic habits. So a part of that, though, is the discovery process, is you really have to chisel away at this falsehood of who you are. And in order to do that, the tool that I used was my life stories and my journey of discovering my authentic self. Mm-hmm. So I gave my life to Christ July 15th, 2001, and it was a really radical transformation. And so with that, I use that story along with other stories. So when I gave my life to Christ, I was nearly bound for a straitjacket, and Christ redeemed my sanity. I was literally losing my mind. And it was this whole intense process. I overdosed on pharmaceuticals, didn't realize Vicodin. Mm-hmm. And I went through this 12-day very bad experience where I was being taunted by demons. And I couldn't sleep. So when I would get in bed, I would sink into my bed with pitchforks stabbing me in the back, which felt like, and these were hallucinogens. Mm-hmm. Like they weren't really happening, but it felt like it. Mm-hmm. And the demons taunting me, I mean, it was nearly believable, as in like I thought it was really happening. But at the same time, it was just this really intense experience. Wow. Where at the very end, through a longer story, which you got to buy my book to know, but through a longer story of how this came about, I gave my life to Christ, and within seconds, he healed me, and I took me down this journey and this path of discovering my authentic self and my purpose and my passion and my selflessness and my growth and all these things attributed with that. So there's a lot of gnarly, intense stories in the book.
Okay, so this is where I want to start first.
Yeah.
Emoji tombola. Divine emoji. Okay, so what is that idea? I mean, you kind of already said what the book is about, but if you would summarize like the hypothesis of the book under this emoji, what is that?
So the hypothesis would be, in order to seize your best life, in order to create a blueprint for your best life, which everyone wants to have their best, even if they have identified that or not, doesn't matter if they have bad habits or good habits, people want to have their best life. They want to enjoy life. They want to enjoy the goodness of life. They maybe want to enjoy their surroundings, even if it's negative, they want to enjoy their best life. So in order to do that, you need to discover your authentic self. But in order to discover your authentic self, you need to know what those authentic habits are, and you need to eliminate excuses. There's a lot of people, like we were talking about earlier, going to the gym, they have excuses. I have parties and I have things that I have to do, so I can't start now, I have to start later. And so most people are waiting to start for the new year or for Monday, and it's not about that, it's about starting now. So that's the whole philosophy with Carpe Now. It's to seize the moment this very second.
Love it. Mili, you wanted to ask something in relationship to that? Or what were you going to ask?
You sent to us 5 minutes from your book. Oh, in that 5 minutes, you cover so much. You know, like in the lies of this world, Beethoven, I used to tell them on our Spanish podcast, people always say, and we say that, people don't change. Never change. And that's a lie, you know, and you was expressing, and that's these 5 minutes that
the audiobook that I sent you, that minutes sample.
Like it, oh boy, these 5 minutes have so much content, you know, and I love to listen to Jordan Peterson, and I feel like you and him are aligned. I mean, they have the same message.
That's good.
And I think the Holy Spirit is doing something through our lives, right? Because like I was saying, I was sharing with you, like I'm having this depression and I don't have the energy and my hair is, I'm losing my hair and all this crazy stuff. Like, I know that God put me on this path to feel like what other people is feeling too. And how I'm gonna get out of this season that I know I can through Jesus, through the Holy Spirit. And this is a season that I'm gonna face. And I know for sure that I'm gonna get out of this, right? But thank you so much for being a good listener to the Holy Spirit. Thank you. I know that that burning you have in you, you know, and the love for other people. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not drunk, you know, people mm-hmm. who we listen to you, that we are mm-hmm. there, we want to yeah. have a better life. And not just me, like, I was looking in LA, for example, all the youth and all this generation, mm. they're looking for something, and they choose this path of new attraction,
love attraction,
the love secret, attraction. The new age stuff, new age, the stones. So like, everybody's living that life because they're looking for something bigger and better to have a better life. Mm. You know, but I feel that it's that small line, mm. right? Mm-hmm. Because your book can sound like that. Oh, be careful. You know, mm. before I was so scared because I have an encounter with the devil too. Mm. And I was kind of lost, and it's so hard for me to identify what is good and what is evil. Mm. I was lost, and I walked with Jesus for already 16 years. Mm. And this happened like 5 years ago.
Wow.
Like, what's hard, you know, for me to discern the good mm. and evil. But now that I follow Jesus and I have the Holy Spirit, when I listen to you, this is coming from my Creator. Mm. It's because I feel that the evil offered the same, is the copy of God in the Bible, you mm. know, like that's a cheap copy mm-hmm. for what we are doing as a followers of Jesus. And I can't wait to read your book and order it on Amazon. I have the link. We will post it here below so you can get your book too.
Yeah. That's so good. Okay, so there's a lot right there, but I think what I'm picking up, okay, so the main theme is like authenticity, mm. but also I feel like you have a lot in common.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, you mentioned almost like battling demons and this like pitchfork mm. and having these, I don't know, are they feelings? Like, could you describe that a little bit? Because I think you're saying you're in the pursuit of your best life, mm. right? So back in the days, what were you pursuing that was that best life, but also that at the same time you had like this demonic encounter? Because I feel like people could resonate with that, just like Millie said, you know, because when you do these things, you know, the law of attraction, all those things, you're looking to be the best you that you can, mm. right? But you look like through these different methods or whatever you want to call them, but then you end up finding like, man, this is horrifying, you know, when night comes, like I have these dreams or visions or hallucinations, right? Mm. So if you could describe that, like, what is it that you were maybe pursuing, or were you pursuing your best life back then when you were experiencing these things? Was that maybe in pursuit of your best life, even though if it's the, I don't know, the worst case scenario to pursue that, right, through hallucinations? Because I always wonder, why do people do things like that, you know,
drugs and what?
Drugs and There's gotta be a sense of like, I like this, like it's mm-hmm. it's offering me something, mm-hmm. right? There's an exchange of something that maybe it's short term, but I'm willing to go mm. right to that. So what was that like for you? Like that wrestling with
So it
that past maybe.
It was a similar motto that I had back then. So when I gave my life to Christ, I was 18. And that was the end of my junior year of high school, going into my senior year. So prior to giving my life to Christ, I wanted to live life to the fullest, but it was by whatever means possible. So it was a very selfish life. It was about doing drugs and getting that temporal feeling that you get from doing drugs and drinking and partying and all that. But if I really want to go to the culprit, and it falls back to me because I'm the fallen one. I'm the one that made all the choices, the sinful choices to take me down the path that I did. But it started with a broken family. So my parents got a divorce when I was 2, and you were telling me about your family situation as well. My parents fell in love right out of high school, and they got married at 18.
Wow.
And they had their whole high school graduating class there, apparently, like 300. They actually were pretty much born and raised in the Costa Mesa area. And they ended up having a great marriage for like 10 years. And then the last 2 years, my dad started to abuse alcohol. And it mm-hmm. wasn't just a Friday, Saturday thing. It was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday. And then it was every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then those last 2 years, from what my mom said, and I wasn't born then, so I didn't remember. but my dad just started to party hard. My dad's an incredible person, so he's a Cuban guy, very passionate. It's very true what they say, that when you drink, you become more of who you are. My dad just becomes fun-loving and incredible and all that, but he would do things like, I'm going to take out, he worked for the city of Orange County. I'm going to take out the entire team. He was a supervisor for afternoon drinks. And that would cost a few thousand dollars. My mom would be like, you know, we can't afford this. But he was just that kind of guy. And it just became too much. So my mom gave him an ultimatum, say, stop or get out. My dad's like, no, I want to get out. So he chose to leave. And so by the time they got a divorce, I was two. I was too young to remember. It was a long time ago. So we were on the run for many years from my dad, because my dad was in pursuit of my mom. He realized he made a bad choice, but he was still drinking like a madman, pursuing my mom. So there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of moving. And then finally, I got to live with my dad when I was elementary school. We moved to Big Bear and then Costa Mesa and Santa Ana and Garden Grove and all these areas. So it was just a lot of back and forth. My mom was kind of like the goody two-shoe. So I saw my mom as this kind of titan of positivity and this warrior for good. And I didn't really associate her with the church, but she was just good. And my dad was also a titan for positivity, oddly enough, but he was just a raging alcoholic. And so spending time with my dad was always of the greatest desire to me, but I just never got that. And I wanted and craved that relationship. And so I guess to a certain extent, I would look at my dad and just naturally I wanted to mimic him. And he was just the cool guy. He was so fun loving and everyone loved him. So I'm like, I want to be that guy. And I didn't really think those things. But looking back now, I recognize, oh, wow, I wanted to be like my dad. So I became the life of the party. And so a lot of smoking, drinking, and that was junior high. And then high school, cocaine, ecstasy, shrooms, all that. And with that, I was really good at a sport. It was skateboarding. I had some sponsors and I used to compete and I had broke my foot and I went to the doctor and the doctor said, are you in a lot of pain? And I was like, a lot of pain, but I wasn't no pain at all. But he gave me some Vicodin.
And
so I knew it was going to be like, sweet, got some drugs. So I was popping those things like candy and I didn't know that the number one side effect of Vicodin is to hallucinate. I didn't know that. So I was popping them like crazy. It was July 4th. 2001, we were sniffing some coke at my parents' house. I knew my parents were going to come home. We had to bounce. There was like eight of my friends. So we went to this place called The Ditch. And it was a ditch that we would like graffiti up. And we used to rap. I used to be a rapper back in the day.
Wow. Show us some of that.
I got nothing. It was a long time. It was like 22 years ago.
Wow.
So my rap name was Digest the Best. So
Digest the Best? Wow, that's fun.
So okay. this was a thing that we would do. We'd go to The Ditch and lay some raps. I had some friends that were beatboxers, were sitting there hanging out, and this is where it all started. I didn't, again, realize that I was about to go on this journey from the side effect of Vicodin. Did not know, but I'm sitting there with my friends, and in my head, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna try to make my hands melt together. Just odd thought. Like, who thinks that? But and that was on no drugs to make me think that. Yes, we had smoked a little bit of weed, but like weed was a daily thing and it didn't really affect me. And maybe a little bit of alcohol, but we did that all the time. And by this time, I was an abuser of alcohol and drugs for 5 years. So we're sitting there. I put my hands together and they melted together and they turned into an A. And then neon green Christmas trees and Smurfs started to fly in the air. And I went like this, and eight of my buddies kind of looked at me, and my heart started to panic like this. But then I didn't tell anyone, because I knew that if I told people, they would look at me different and be like, Jake's losing his mind. So, and clearly, from that moment on, worst nightmare. So I was like...
Because you said that was without the hallucination? Like, so, you were experiencing that out of the drugs, or because of the drugs? Or
so because of the Vicodin, but I didn't realize...
Oh, you didn't know? Okay.
Because I was popping them like crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I had just a short 8 days prior, I got a full bottle. I don't know how many pills were in there, but a day prior to that, so within 7 days, I had capped the bottle. The bottle was gone.
Wow.
So they were all consumed. And so I was at least probably having, I'm not sure how big the milligram dosage was, but 5 to 10 a day at least, going throughout my normal activities as well. So didn't realize this was happening, but clearly very evil thought, weird thought. And in that moment, Satan really kind of had control of my mind, where it was this 12-day, very intense, very descriptive. I couldn't even take the time right now to explain, but it's all in my book. of all the things that I experienced that night. I was terrified. So I asked one of my friends, I'm 18, mm-hmm. and I'm this hardened, you know, 18-year-old kid that had been arrested and in trouble with the law and expelled from multiple schools. And I'm terrified to be alone. And so I asked one of my friends, hey, do you want to stay the night with me? And without giving it, you know, the impression that something's wrong with Jake. So he's on my ground sleeping, and I see all the posters on my wall start to swirl, and a few of them became crystal clear. And one of which was the Imperial Eagle from Hitler, hmm. along with a swastika. And so there was these very evil things mm-hmm. on my wall, and I'm like, what in the world is this? And then in that moment, I started to sink into my bed, and I felt like there was pitchforks, and then I felt like there was hands trying to pull me into the bed. And it was an experience where the walls were moving, the floor was moving. I was seeing demonic figurines taunt me and chase me. And this was for 12 days, and it was just awful.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was intense.
So evil. Because you can be on drugs and why not be in heaven? Right? Mm-hmm. And have mm-hmm. a good experience, because for some reason people is taking this drugs to be good and peaceful. Mm-hmm. But this was totally the opposite.
Yeah, bad experience. Yeah, bad trip.
Like you was leaving heaven. I mean hell.
Yeah, I mean, wow. The best way to describe it is if someone had taken hallucinogens before, mm-hmm. there is something called a bad trip. And when you're mm-hmm. in a bad trip, it's really hard to get out of it. Mm-hmm. So it's like a bad trip for 12 days, 24/7, wow. constantly.
Wow. Okay. So out of that, what happens next? Like how is that connected to like trying to still live your best self? It seems to me like that's kind of like the,
I was not living my best self right there.
Right. But it's you're saying, your upbringing, right? Like you're trying to emulate maybe your dad and that fun that he had, that coolness. Mm-hmm. So maybe the drugs weren't necessarily doing that. Did you feel like you were somewhat accomplished in those times or no?
No, not at all.
Do you feel more like lost?
So in the beginning of my book, I describe what it takes to digest authenticity. In order to do that, it starts with the introduction, which is to be present. And in order to be present, you have to be ready to digest some intense stuff. So you get into a present state, and so this could be through prayer, meditation, realizing. You ever read a book called Ragamuffin Gospels?
Mm-mm. I've heard of it. Maybe I've read it, but yeah. Okay.
So he does a really good job of getting people into a present state. And then the very first habit, the very first chapter is foundation. So I basically start the book off by saying I had a weak foundation for 18 years of my life, and that was a broken foundation, and it was headed nowhere. And basically without Jesus, that's where everyone's headed. It's a weak foundation. And then I have a firm foundation, and that's in Christ. So that's July 15th and after. So basically at the very end of it, I'm losing it. I did not tell my mom the entire time what was going on. I finally, my mom or anyone, but the reason I say my mom, kind of naturally and organically, she was the person that offered comfort and assistance. She's my mom. Mm-hmm. So I felt like at the end of the day, mom can help me. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, I was about to lose it. And it was day 11. And I asked my mom to pick me up at this skate park over by Laguna Hills High School. And she takes me to this church function, which she was surprised that I even wanted to go, because it was like 8:30 at night. Back then, I did home studies, and I was not the best student. I'd come home at like 2-3 o'clock almost every night, partying, drunk, high, all that. So it was 8 o'clock, I think, on a Saturday night, and she's like, you want to come with me to a church function? That's weird. Okay, yeah, you can come. So my mom was tied in with the church, went. It was weird. People were lifting their hands, worshiping, doing, and I'm like, what is this? This is strange. And I left. And I'm out on the curb crying profusely, and I feel like I'm about to let it go, like I'm about to lose it. It had, like I said, been 11 days to this point. Mom comes out, and she's like, what's going on? And I told her, and I said that these bad dreams, I was just telling her they were bad dreams, were really bad. And so she starts crying as well. She says, can I pray for you? She prayed for me. I didn't even pay attention. I was terrified. Next day was church. We went to church. And I said, I want to go to church. She was shocked that I want to go to church. We went there. And I remember the pastor was up on stage and he disappeared. I mean, he didn't really disappear, but he disappeared. And these prison bars appeared behind him. And I just felt like, okay, this is it. Like, I am, it's 12 days into it. And it was a full-blown spiritual war for 12 days. Mm-hmm. And I was in the trenches, in the thick of it. So I go to the car, I am bawling. Mom gets in the car, and I finally confess. And I'm like, Mom, I think it's karma. I think it's caught up to me. Life is now coming to a head, because I've lived a very selfish life. So my life was very selfish. It was all about me and living life to the fullest. And I would steal from department stores and trouble with the law, breaking and entering and all this stuff. And finally, I'm like, okay, this is it. My mom's crying and she's silent, and I'm terrified that she's silent. And she ends up saying, well, I have someone that can help you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and so she's Christian. She went to church, and I paid no attention to that. And I said, who? And she said, Jesus. And I remember going, let's go meet him. Like, I was just in another place. I legitimately thought we're going to go meet Jesus. We're going to go meet Jesus.
Wow.
Like a physical person.
Yeah.
And so she's like, no, it's God, and he can save you. But you got to commit your life to him. She gave me a 30-second little altar call. And there was no real story attached other than he can save you. And
wow.
I was like, I'm in. Yeah, let's do it. So we prayed, and literally within seconds of praying, done, we're bawling, we're crying. There was this sense of confidence and this sense of peace and the sense of, yeah, I'm going to be able to do this. And so clearly when you accept Christ, you're given his spirit and you're given a strength and a depth. So at that point, everything that I was seeing and experiencing, it went away within a second. It doesn't mean that there wasn't a times that Satan would still try to lure me in to not just the past, but the possibility of, hey, you know, you could still lose your mind, Jake. Mm. So everything that I was seeing and experiencing, and it was intense, and it's, again, all on the book, it's very intense, it was gone in seconds. I was healed in seconds, but it was a few years of, in the moment of weakness at night, when it was quiet and no one was around, Satan would lure me with thoughts of, you're going to lose it. You're going to lose your mind for sure. So I would have these panic attacks, and I would have these spiritual battles, which are also drawn out in the book. And it was very intense. And so that built a lot of toughness in me and perseverance. So that's why I have such a strong, devout faith that I would go at any lengths to do what I have to do for Christ. Mm. And it's because of that season and what I experienced and what I went through. That's why the book has this authenticity and this genuineness, because I literally expose all of me in the book. Mm. Everything that people would normally not want to expose, like all the deep, dark secrets. And at that point, I'm bringing everything to the light, and it's given people an opportunity to do the same thing. In order to find your authentic self, you really have to expose who you are, which, you know, people don't do that.
It's hard.
Yeah, they want their best life. They're also not willing to do what it takes to get there. You have to go through a very tough, lonely road to get your best life sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. And I think some power there when you confess your sins and who you really are and you face it. I think God gives you the power to overcome that. You know, for example, I used to be an alcoholic and keep it in secret because, of course, your sins, you do it in secret, you know, where nobody sees you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge power. Like, no, I'm an alcoholic. And that's how I stop people, because they will drink. Like, no, I have a problem in the past with the alcohol. And if I drink one, I want to drink, you know, and it's hard for me to stop. So, no.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Your dad is still around?
Yeah, now I have a good relationship with my dad. He quit alcohol about 22 years ago, 25 years ago, maybe. It's as good as it can be. And it, by great, I mean that my dad is at a distance. He lives in Washington State.
Mm.
We still talk pretty regularly. I think the feelings that I had when I was younger, like I wanted to be like my dad because I didn't really get the attention from my dad like I wanted, I put those feelings to rest in my early 20s because I always craved that intimate relationship with my dad, that close relationship. Never really got that. My dad's not also the most in-depth kind of guy. You know, he's an incredible person, and I don't want to knock my dad, but he kind of lives on the surface to a certain extent. And I was just talking to one of my friends this morning at the gym. I like to go deep quick, and some people can't handle it, and I'm kind about it. But like, you know, the whole, he brought up the whole, okay, if, when someone wants to be authentic, they take it that they need to be aggressive and assertive and direct with people. And it's like, well, if you don't like my truth, then too bad. And it really comes across very selfish. And I said, well, fundamentally, in order to be authentic, you need to be selfless. And that is one of the authentic habits. You have to be selfless. So it comes from a place of kindness and love and generosity, opposed to some people take authenticity the wrong way. You know, there's this genuine, I need to be me and not like you, and I need to bash people for what they believe and what they do. And even though I have strong beliefs, I have such an eclectic group of friends that don't believe what I believe. They have different political views, different views in God. They don't believe in God. And I still love them. Mm-hmm. I'm still next to them. And they're still next to me because we have this common ground where we can be genuine about who we are.
Why 10? And why not 10? 20 habits?
Yes, that's a really good question. So it's not in correlation to like the 10 commandments or anything like that. But I wanted to be able to really dive into what does it take to be authentic without an overkill of like, here's 50 habits. It's like, well, this is really intense. And I think 10 is even a lot. But I think it's the right number for actually being able to dive into the authentic you. The book works in a way that when you're diving into these habits, it can be chiseled away one habit at a time. But it can also be that like, hey, I know my foundation. Like I know the core and the anchor of who I am, which that is, let's just say, Jesus. Okay, that's great. So you have your foundation. Maybe you can skip that one and go to the next. There's still relevance in each habit, but they work in a way to where you can jump to one or the other. You talked about fitness. So one of the habits is fitness, especially within the Christian world. Like we have someone, and I don't want to name a name, but in our life, he's a spiritual man. He's an incredible man, but he's very overweight. He's like 200 pounds overweight. So can you really be that spiritual if you're 200-300 pounds away? He looks like he's about to have a heart attack. So that's not good.
I know a few.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, all the 10 habits are there for a reason. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, like, sorry, Greg Rochelle, probably I changed your name. I don't know how exactly pronounce. Better always laugh at me because I change names. But that's that's, I pronounce it well. Good?
Kind of. It's pretty good.
But pretty good. You know, he was
Craig
saying
Rochelle?
That one. That he will do one every year.
One new habit?
One new habit every year. So can you imagine? I've been doing that 20... I will not say a number. I don't remember exactly, but like 20 years. And if you think, like in 20 years, 20 new habits, it's amazing. It's so good. And can be... You know, just using the floss, for example. You know what you're gonna no cavities because you're doing the work. It's so small things we can do and apply in our lives to change, right? And do it for good. So, how hard was for you making this book? Like, in what time? You have your company, you have your kids. How? How you did it?
So I'm not limited by plateaus. I think that people believe in plateaus, and I think they don't exist. It's more God's timing. God will allow things to happen when it's His timing. And so I say that because before deciding to write a book, which was at the beginning of 2023, one, I spent 3 months journaling. I've been journaling and spending time with God faithfully every day, and yes, I've missed days here or there for 22 years, a long time. So that is one key element, I think, to my life, is that I, every day, even if it's for 15 minutes, I'm like, God, I'm going to spend time with you, and it's just, I'm going to listen. I'm going to get into your word. I'm going to pray. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to journal. I hate to journal. But I journal. Like, I do the things that I don't like to do because I want to get where I want to get. And that fundamentally is really changing the world. I want to change lives for Christ. I want to change lives for His kingdom. And I want to impact people one at a time. And the only way to do that is to start with myself. So I journaled the first half of 2023. Do I really want to write a book? Prayed about it, thought about it, and it was a big yes. Like, yeah, I'm going to write a book. I have no clue what I'm going to write about. And then I spent 30 days, about a month, putting together a framework as to how I'm going to write the book. And a part of the habits were, okay, if I'm very engineer-like when I create something, okay, if I'm going to create a self-development book, which I thought that's the angle I wanted to go, so a nonfiction book, those are hard for people. They're hard to digest. There's a lot of people that don't like to read those books. So how can I create a novel-like book, in my mind, a fiction-like book in a nonfiction that read like stories, that had a memoir type feel, where it was like, oh, this doesn't feel like I'm digesting. Like what? Okay, authentic habits, 10 authentic habits, that's intense. That also sounds for some people boring. Like, no, I don't want to do that. But I illustrate these crazy stories. Like, you nearly lost your mind. Okay, you ran a 50-mile foot race, 25 miles on two legs, 25 miles on one leg, through 8,000 feet of elevation on Catalina Island in January. And so that's in perseverance. So I took my life stories and applied them in the book. So then putting together a structure and then actually deciding, okay, I did something called mind mapping, which is where you sit down and you really figure out what are the broken record conversations I have with people, along with other questions, to get where I need to get with the book. And why is it that I've met hardened criminals that are literally gangsters, full of tattoos, dudes that are, I mean, they're hard. And within 20 minutes, 30 minutes, they're being vulnerable and they're shedding tears with me and telling me their life story. And I'm like, what's happening? But the only thing that I can think is that I'm extremely authentic with people. Not to say I'm perfect. No, being authentic means you're very broken. So I'm very broken. I'm a broken man. And so recognizing that brokenness allows me to be vulnerable with people. And all of a sudden they're exposing themselves to me in the world. And it's like, whoa, this is crazy. So it came back to authenticity and then chiseling away what would it look like. And then honestly, writing the book from start to finish was 9 months. And I was in a constant state of prayer, meditation, time with God. And I know I did everything I could to glorify God in this book. Because even though it is, so it's not per se a Christian book, and that would confuse people. Actually, one of my friends, Ryan Mariello, was a great friend of mine. He said it best. He said that books can't be Christians. He said companies, businesses can't be Christians because they're not going to heaven. People are Christians. And I'm like, that's money. That's incredible. So the book is not a Christian book. The book is for everyone and anyone who wants to digest it. But it comes from this place that I, on occasion, share very intently the truth of Jesus and almost altar call-like and the truths behind Jesus and his resurrection and all that. But at the same time, if you don't want to believe that, I still love you. Can you still not read this book and digest information that could still really help your life? So we'll see. I know that Christians will like the book. I think that they're going to like it. But non-Christians, will they give it a chance? I don't know. We'll find out.
Wow, that's so good.
Can you share one day of Jake? How do you wake up and how looks?
Yeah, sure. So I typically don't set an alarm. So I'm blessed in that regard. I could just get up when I get up. When I'm really, my wife knows, she laughs. When I'm really excited about whatever's happening, which is kind of like all the time, like 24/7, 365. My standard go-to time, I get up at about 4 a.m. But some days I sleep in, and that could be at the latest 6 a.m. And if I can't sleep past 6, but if I did, I would feel worthless. Not that that's necessarily true, but it's just a feeling that I have. But I get up typically at 4. Sometimes I get up, though, at 2 a.m., 11 p.m. the night before, and I just start my days. So what? I get up really hard. I'm not even joking.
I know the older people, they can sleep so long and they wake up pretty earlier.
Yeah.
But you're young.
Yeah, no, I'm young. I'm only 40. So, but my go-to time is 4. I get up. I spend time with God. So that is undebatable. Doesn't matter if I'm traveling, whatever I'm doing. And I think what allows me to be effective in that, as I say, it's just 15 minutes. But really 15 minutes turns into 30, 45, hour and a half. It's always different. But I basically put my journal, my Bible, maybe another book, concordance. I start with prayer and I just go, where are we going? And I spend time with God. And then I go to the gym. That's kind of like my coffee. So I work out every day. I don't take days off. It could be light days. Like today, I have a rule, and the rule is no more than 60 minutes in the gym. So I went to the gym, and I normally start with the sauna for 20 minutes, but I got caught in a very deep faith discussion in the sauna with this random guy.
Sweet.
Wow. And so I was in the sauna for 50 minutes, and I was like, ah! And I had thermo on, a sweater on, thermo pants, sweatpants, and I was just dying. So I had 10 minutes when I got out. So at that point, it was like, I'm going home. I got to show up to a podcast. So, and then I'll typically either go to work or take one of my kids on a date. I date my kids every week. So that's really important to me, at least an intentional date where I'm like, hey, Kingston, we're going to go somewhere fun. And it doesn't always have to be spending money, but let's spend time together. I go to work. I have appointments. I do my normal to-dos. I try to get done around 3-ish, 3:30-ish with all that because my kids have jujitsu in the afternoon at 3:30. So I try to be a part of that. And if I'm not a part of that, then I'll typically get home around like 4 or 5 o'clock. But it's for me, it's appointments, it's calls, it's emails. I have creative time set aside where I call it my creative hour, where it's at least an hour where I'm trying to create something new. So I'm working on this Bible study for you version right now, and it ties in with Carpe Now, and so that'll probably be available in the next 6 weeks to 8 weeks. So I'm trying to create always something new in future books and future ideas. I'm always being an entrepreneur, like I have been, and I've created 12 companies, and they weren't big companies, they were small companies, but I've been in business for a long time. I have this itch to always want to create. So I'm always just kind of creating things. And then I get home, I try to spend time with wifey and the kids, and have intentional time where I don't have my phone on or around me. And then we try to get to bed at a good time, like 8, 9 o'clock. And then I start it all over again. I don't have the typical days off. I don't have the typical days off. So I don't do like weekends off, like Saturdays and Sundays. To me, Sunday is like Monday. Monday is like Saturday. Like every day is go time. Let's go.
Yeah.
I always tell people, which they don't get it, and maybe you might get it, maybe your listeners might get it, but I work 365, and then I also take off 365. So I rule my schedule. So I take off days and times and periods that I want, and I don't have my phone on me. So my phone's right there. It's away from me. And then I have days where I'm like go mode, like boom, let's go. We're crushing it. We're killing it. So, yeah.
Wow, that's intense. That's a good example for us.
That's great. Oh, thank you for sharing. Man, there's so much in what you've said. And, you know, thank you for sharing your story. And for sure, you know, if people want to, like, go deeper into the story, like, go read the book, Carpe Now. And, I mean, I love how you wanted to put the book into, like, kind of like nonfiction, fiction realm, right? Because people understand stories, right? And if you think how Jesus spoke, it says, the Bible says that he always spoke in parables. So it's like, wow, it's so important because stories are powerful and are memorable, right? Like we remember things. But also I want to commend you because, I mean, one, writing a book and listening to the Spirit and putting it out and all the work. And like you said, I mean, you have a busy and not busy life. Right, as you just said, but also I think what I love is that I think you found authenticity, and I love the idea of persuasion, and I think that's why so many people want to write books, right? You just mentioned at the beginning of the episode, like 11,000 new books a day, published a day. I mean, that's massive, but I think it's because humans have this desire to persuade one another, right? And to tell stories and to say, this story that I'm telling you matters, right? And whether, like you're saying, you know, you hang out with people on different political spectrums, and I think we all have, you know, friends and family who might align differently than we do, and they're still friends and family, right? But I think just the idea of persuasion and to trying to say, can I live a life so impactful that maybe through a book, maybe through like you witnessing my life, you might be persuaded to be an authentic yourself, right? And to be vulnerable. And I think you found so much value in that principle of authenticity. And like you say, maybe coming from a broken foundation to a firm foundation. And I love that you mentioned Christ, right? But also in a sense, I think even people without Christ, I think the idea of having a firm and a non-firm foundation, I think it's understandable, right? I come from a broken path. Okay, that's something anybody can relate to and understand and see. Okay, yeah, I want to check this out because I come from, you know, a broken family background, or, you know, my dad was alcoholic, or my dad wasn't home, or, you know, whatever it might have been. But coming with the, maybe, I don't know, maybe, I think when people pick a book, I think it's because we want to be, in a sense, persuaded by it, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe the book speaks to us, or maybe it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But I think the cool thing about, like, even being sitting down with you right now is, like, we get to know you and the heart behind maybe the book, right? And I think that's ultimately what a book is. It's like, who is this person and what's their true intention in writing, right? So that's where I all that to say, you know, I want to commend you for taking that step and for wanting to persuade people and say, you know, be you authentically, and even to recognize, because you mentioned this, to recognize that being authentic, there's a, I don't know how you would phrase it, and maybe you can do this right now, right? But it seems to me like you're saying there's a right way to be authentic, because also there's a deceiving way to be authentic. And that's almost paradoxical, because authenticity is basically saying this is truth. But you're saying that the truth you're living can be a lie, or can be deceitful in a sense. So can you speak a little bit more into maybe how you differentiate, like, an authentic vulnerability or authentic self versus...
So just hearing you, I think that there's two questions that you have to ask is... So I know a lot of people that are authentic. So it's, are you authentic? And they're like, yes, I'm absolutely authentic. And I would say I agree. But then the next question is, are you living your best life? Are you happy? Are you content? Are you fulfilled? Are you pursuing a mission that gives you a passion and an aliveness to not just like your life, but like every day, every moment? Yes, there's moments that I feel, you know, bedraggled and beaten up, and I need to maybe... So I have this guy in my life group, and I love him, but he sarcastically, and it's fine, it's sarcastic, but he's like, carpe now, right? Carpe now. And I'm like, absolutely. But he's said it a couple of times in regards to me relaxing. And he's like, is that a carpe now life? Yes, it is. Because in moments, that is carpe now. You need to seize that moment. And sometimes that moment, God is calling you to rest and chill and kick back. So I think with, to answer your question, it's, okay, are you authentic? Okay, maybe you are. But is that authenticity giving you fulfillment? And so maybe it's not. And if it's not giving you fulfillment, and if it's not giving you an excitement about life, then maybe you need to refocus that authenticity. Maybe it's not the authenticity that you want. So, because a lot of people they're struggling. They're not only financially and physically struggling, but they're emotionally and spiritually struggling. There's people that seem like they have it all figured out. They have all the money, all the cars, all the nice things, but then they inevitably end up killing themselves or just doing these atrocious, awful things. And I don't really per se believe there are bad people. God has not designed bad people. He's designed perfectly created people, but they're fallen people. And these fallen people make bad choices. So they take themselves down this path that is unfortunate. And we're all capable of taking that path. And most people, believer or non-believer, would not battle this one, which we all have freedom of choice. And you have the choice to choose your life. So you either choose the right path or the wrong path. And fundamentally for me, I've always wanted to be like David from the Bible. Right? I wanted to be like Job. I wanted to be someone that at the end of my life, I was just telling my wife this last week, that I am literally crawling to heaven, and I'm tired, and I'm drained, and I've done everything I could, and God's like, that was intense. You just did it.
Wow.
Opposed to like just, you know, doing some good. I don't want to just do good. I want to do my best, whatever that is. I don't know what that is, but I know I'm just going to do it. And so people have told me I had some epic fails in the past, businesses that have failed, and I think people thought that, oh man, Jake's broken. And I think to their surprise, they're like, how's Jake not a fool?
How'd you did it?
Yeah, I honestly, I don't put, I don't put all of me into that company. Or if my book tanks, like there's 11,000 books that are published every single day. The lifetime sales for a book, the average lifetime sales is 100 to 300 copies. Lifetime. 100 to 300 copies. But I want to be a bestseller. And I don't want to be a bestseller because I want to make money, because I don't lead with making money. Making money is nice, because I got to support my family and my community and my church and God and do all that. But I want to be a bestseller because I want to impact lives. Mm. And to be a bestseller, you got to sell about 10,000 copies on a given platform in 1 month, 30 days. So if I don't do it, it's not like people in the past, like, Jake, man, sucks, right? And it's like, no, like I've already moved on. I've been doing this now for 22 years, grinding for Christ. And by grinding, it's a good grind. I enjoy it. I love it. It's like, man, Jake, you work so much. And I do. But work to me is my passion. And work is, I lead with helping people. How can I serve and help people?
Like, that's who
like
you
real
are.
Estate. Like, I don't like real estate, but I love people. So I want to serve people. And so I'm going to keep grinding till the day I die. I don't care if it's, you know, today or 100 years from now. I'm going to keep going until I cross the finish line. And God's going to be like, whoa, you did it. That was intense.
Yeah.
I can't believe, and I want my kids to see that. I want them to see that legacy so that they then can carry, that is a huge thing for me, legacy. Legacy wow. specifically in my children where they're like, wow, this guy, my dad, was a titan, as in he did everything he could. And I might not make it to like the David Goggins status or like someone that's well known. That's okay with me. But as long as I did everything I could do to assist people, help people, love people, give back, which I feel called to. So
good. I think we're all called to do that.
Yes, yes,
right?
We are.
Because we are Jesus' apostles. And if we don't do that, so that's when we're going to leave hell. Because you're not doing nothing for the kingdom when God give us everything we need to work for him, right? And I think that's what happened to me. When I'm not working for other people or doing things to help people around me, I'm like, if I'm not here and I decided to don't come, like I feel like I'm doing something so bad and weak and depression. So I know it's hard for me sometimes come and do when I'm not feeling good. But then I get out of here with so powerful, like, yes, I did it. And God used me. And, you know, and if I'm going to struggle, God knows what's going on. But I have his power. And he's so inspired to hear your stories, because Beto and I, we have so many failures in our lives too, you know, with businesses, with the podcast. Yeah. How many podcasts we had in the past?
This is like attempt number 10.
And again and again, you know, and I asked God, open doors, close doors. And the devil always wants me to believe that I'm poor. So for me, the money has been an issue in our lives. You know, I was raised in Mexico, and I was poor, right? But I was having everything, honestly. I'm here, and we are illegal. So fighting with this legal process is taking us like 7 years already. They denied twice the government. We are in a third case, and it's a battle. You know, it's hard. Like, and
I love it.
We're trying to do our best for to don't be a burden for this country, to work, you know. Beto's been working here at the church for already 7 years, and I work at the district for free, representing to the the ESL.
The English
learners. You know, English learners. I did it for 4 years, giving my time, you know. I try to participate in whatever I can. At my church, at the school, at my community, you know, with Love Costa Mesa, and help my neighbors, and working hard, you know. But I love what Dr. Jordan Peterson one time say, like, to be poor, it's not about money. If you have opportunities in this life, you are rich. And that transform everything inside of me, because my son is going to Christian school is called Pacifica, the best high school in Orange County, you know, and we had a scholarship We applied for financial aid, and they accept him.
Cool.
And everybody amazing. Around us, like, I didn't tell them, and they came over. I hear that your son is going. Congratulations. And they, see, we are rich to be here in this country, in this beautiful bubble. We are rich. So many people in other countries, they're really suffering. They have no food, and they're living in war. And, they don't have Jesus, right? But it is this continue fighting with the devil. Like, you're poor, you don't have a car, you don't have this, you don't have that. And it's hard. Like, sometimes I believed him, you know, and the exercise of to be, I don't know, some power comes to me. I think it's more serotonin in my brain.
Serotonin.
Yeah. When I'm exercising, you know, and when I'm not, like, that weak.
Yeah, it's all connected.
Yes.
Okay, that's so good. We're going to kind of like come to the close with, we're going to go back to the emojis, okay? So this is what we do to finish the episode. Blasphemous emoji or blasphemous idea. Okay, so according to Carpe Now, what is the worst idea you can think of as people, you know, are thinking about grabbing this book? What is the worst idea you can tell them? Avoid
this idea. So like a mistranslation from the book?
What?
Like a mistranslation as in like they take Carpe Now and they're doing the wrong thing, you're saying?
No, whatever. Whatever you think is the worst idea you can tell anybody that's going to pick up the book. Maybe when you grab this book, it's like, this is the worst. Like, don't even grab this book if you have this maybe mindset.
Okay, so I would say the worst idea is to apply the book unauthentically and to not take in each habit, like we talked about, is to be authentic by being real or being candid or being hurtful or being unkind to people. That's wrong.
That's the worst idea. That makes
sense.
Not
good.
All right, I love it. Okay, the next one is skeptical emoji. Where do you see skepticism played out when it comes
with
to
with that face, please?
Yes, with that face. When it comes to Carpe Now,
I would say the doubt.
Yeah, a little closer to the mic.
Doubt of God's existence and Jesus. Mm. I'm pretty clear that I'm calling out Jesus as God. So there's going to be skepticism there.
Love it. Okay, the next one is inspired. So what are you inspired by, or where do you see inspiration?
I see inspiration in my kids. I see inspiration in my wife. She is so different than me. Well, and I'm inspired by that because she's just not like me. Someone even asked me this morning in the sauna. I was like, man, it's incredible that we found a life group just like 5 months ago. This was a prayer request of my wife's. She's over the moon. I'm really happy for her. And they're like, so your wife's more social? And I'm like, no, not at all. I'm more social.
Wow.
So we're just so different. And I love that. I've just grown to truly love and cherish the fact that she is furthest from me and I'm furthest from her.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay. So what's a holy idea according to Carpe Now?
Holy idea, yes, is that in order to seize your best life, you need to digest these 10 authentic habits that are in that book. You need to chisel away at the falsehoods. You need to get past the layers of lies that people have been told about themselves in order to truly discover their best life.
So good. Okay, and last one.
Divine
emoji. What is the highest idea according to Carpe Now?
The highest idea, that one's simple, is that Jesus is God, is that Jesus is alive, is that Jesus did live, and that he was buried, he was crucified, he was buried, and he rose from the grave, and that he is real, and that he's evident in the lives of those around us. He's evident in my life. He's evident in your life. He's evident in your life. He's evident everywhere. Even if you don't look at other people's lives, you can see the evidence of Christ in creation, in the mountains, in the snow, in the weather, and these things that are just not to be explained. The human body is so intricate, that alone just blows. How is it that people are confused by God's existence, yet people would also recognize that they probably know less than 1% of all knowledge, just all knowledge, all wisdom, all understanding. I have some friends that are PhDs, highly educated, and in their particular field, they're like, I know so little about my craft.
Wow.
I mean, literally less than 1%. I know so little about the human body. I'm talking about surgeons and doctors and these individuals that are so educated and they're so smart. They know so little about their craft. So how is it that we can't look at God and go, he knows so much more than us. He thinks so beyond us. We're just in this like little bubble, this globe, this earth, trying to do our best, and we know so little. So God is real, God is evident, God is there, and we'll find out when we die.
Love it. Okay, and that's how we end the episode. Woo! High fives all around. There we go. Okay, Jake, so plug your book. We'll have the show notes. I'll put this on christianpodcast.com. Okay. But where can people go find the book or find you more about maybe where, you know, a little bit of what you do? Right?
Yeah, sure. So the book was just released last Friday. Context, what are we in? We're in February. Yes. So it's only been out for about 8 days. And you can buy it on Amazon, paperback or hard copy, which you're going to have the link associated. Or you can go to my website, which is jakebarena.com. And that has access to not only the hard copy, the paperback, but the audiobook. It's going to be available in about 2 weeks. That's narrated by me. And there's a lot of ad lib in there. So it's different than the actual hard copy.
Wow.
And then the ebook is going to launch on Kindle and all major digital platforms March 5th. So you can just go to my website, jakebarena.com, and that's full access to all my socials and the book and all the fun stuff.
Love it. Thank you so much, Jake. This has been amazing. Thank you, Millie, for this special episode. Thank you, you, for listening, for watching this show. I would love to invite you to give us a positive review. If you made it all the way to this point, why not go the extra mile and give us a positive review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can find us now on YouTube Music, which took over Google Podcasts. It's now YouTube Music. And YouTube channel, or you can visit us at christianpodcast.com and click on your own emoji. You know, see how the world's doing with their Beliefometer, right? From blasphemous to divine. So thank you so much, Jake. This has been fun and wonderful. Yes, experience getting to know you a little bit more.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for everything you are giving us today. Your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Beto. Boom, boom, boom. There we go.